Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Hot Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a podcast for IT business support. Whether you work in corporate IT, own a managed service company, have your own computer repair shop, or are a solo consultant, this podcast shares stories, tips, and tools to help you manage your networks. And this is a live show that is being broadcast both on YouTube and the Facebook. And it is our first of a series of discussions that we are going to have on diversity in tech. I have joined with me Amelia Mack, Dave Sobel, and Rayanne Buccianico. They are going to do their own full introductions. I'm not going to butcher any titles or mess up any history for them. I'm going to let them do their own in just a couple of minutes. But to set the premise of what we are doing today, we know that we have been in some very uncertain times. We've got the COVID-19 and we've got the world after George Floyd. So one of the things that I noticed is that in those days and weeks after, people were kind of afraid or didn't know how to talk. And some people were obviously bringing up topics of what about us or what about this group? And I realized that diversity seems to be a tough topic to discuss inside the tech world. So I thought, let's find a way to start those discussions and see what we can do. To basically understand, first of all, diversity, we are going to talk about affirming the inclusion of different types of people, race, ethnicity, gender, class, sexual orientation, age, physical abilities, religious beliefs, political beliefs, cognitive styles, and much more. And we're also going to use the term inclusion, which is basically the act or practice of including and accommodating people who have historically been excluded, ensuring that people feel that they belong and that their input is valued. So what better way to do that than to have real stories from real people in tech? And that's what we're going to do today. So now I'm going to sit back and let our panelists introduce themselves. And we're going to go basically in the order of the screen that I see. So Amelia, you're sitting right next to me, so I'll let you go first.
Oh, good. Okay. I'll start things off then. So my name is Amelia Mack. I am a lesbian transgender woman. My pronouns are she, her. I started in IT close to about 20 years ago, worked in the Geek Squad at Best Buy as one of my first real quote unquote professional jobs. Until just about 3 years ago, I was tackling the IT sector as a straight cis white male. I've worn a lot of hats over those years. I've, like I said, worked at the Geek Squad. I've done numerous help desk jobs. I have worked as a network admin, sysadmin. I've done web development. I've owned a couple of different break fix shops now. I've done cell phone repair. So I've got a lot of different experiences under my belt. But it's only within the last 3 years here that I was able to come out and start kind of living my life authentically. In these last 3 years, I have owned my own business in a small, very conservative area of southern New Mexico. And had some interesting experiences that have gone hand in hand with being a trans woman in that sort of community.
All right, thank you. And we'll just continue around in a clockwise circle, Rayanne.
So thank you, Marvin. Thank you so much for putting all of this together. I'm really, really looking forward to it. And my name is Rayanne Buccianico, and I'm the owner of a company called ABC Solutions. We are a full-service accounting firm in Clearwater, Florida. And you may be wondering, like, okay, why is there an accountant here? I'll get to that in a minute. You know, I've been connected with the IT community since the early SBS days, probably coming up on 20 years. And I have watched this community grow up, and I grew up with it, you know? You know, and not only has technology changed, but all of us have changed too. Like, the first SMB Nation event that I ever attended was in 2006. And I recall a small group of women gathering in one of the meeting rooms discussing how to attract more women into the IT sector. And so one of the best parts about going to an IT channel event back then was that there was never a line for the ladies room. I mean, that was like the ongoing joke. You know, I used to giggle at, when I would go to Tech Ed and I would see this big long line, you know, standing in waiting for the men's room. And then there was like nobody trying to get into the women's room. And it was just non-existent, right? You know, and it was the only time I've ever seen that, you know, but here we are, you know, almost 15 years later, and we're still having the same conversation. How do we get more women into IT? You know, and I spent a few years on the executive council with CompTIA's Advancing Women in IT, and we did some great work on that council, you know, but still, I'm not sure that it's really enough. I have conversations with MSPs, and there are plenty of MSPs, you know, that are seeking specifically to hire, you know, more women or more, you know, diversity, you know, whether it's, you know, people of color or women or, you know, from the LGBT community, you know, they are actively seeking to hire them, but they cannot get them, you know, to apply for these jobs, you know. So, so back to my story in 2006, when I attended that first channel event, I went with a friend and, you know, we shared a room, and I'll never forget something that she said to me. I forget the context of the statement, you know, but the words were, they were exactly this. She says, you know, there's never any women here, you know, because whenever people see women in IT, they immediately think we're dykes. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know, stealing that line from that Seinfeld episode, right? Well, needless to say, that wasn't the day that I came out to her. So, you know, because I did not want my first introduction to this enormous group of people that I didn't know any of them. You know, I knew of them, you know, they were part of the channel, but, you know, I did not want my first introduction to be, you know, oh, that's Rayanne. We'll call her the SBS dyke. You know, I'm sure that's what they would have called me, right? Everybody had names back then. You know, Susan Bradley, she was the SBS diva, and Amy Babinchek, she was, what did they call her? The ISA queen, you know, because ISA was, you know, ISA server was big back then, you know, and, you know, now that I think about it, I think only the women had the nicknames. I don't recall any of the men having nicknames back then. Anyway, you know, I just think as a society, we've come a long way since then. You know, the channel matured, we've matured, and the world matured as a bit. Gay marriage is legal in all 50 states, whether you like it or not. You know, and the current generation has decided that they don't want to be pigeonholed into neat little labels, you know, just to make other people more comfortable. You know, the younger generation is here, and they don't want to play grandpa's games anymore. You know, they're making their own rules, you know, and we don't have to like all of it, you know, but we absolutely need to understand it, need to be able to talk openly about it. And, you know, in order for us to move positively into the future, we need to embrace it. And thank you for putting this together to help us find a way to do
that. No problem. Dave?
Sure. I'm Dave Sobel. So if we're doing the professional version of it, so I spent 10 years as an MSP. So ran my own business doing that, was heavily involved in CompTIA and HTG and the community efforts and SMB Nation and all that kind of stuff. Wrote a book during that time frame, was on Microsoft MVP. So I come from that very traditional MSP background. when I sold that business, I actually moved over to the vendor side. I ran community for Level Platforms, GFI, Logic Now, and SolarWinds during sort of an 8-year time span as a vendor. And I left all of that trying to go out and strike some new conversations. So I do a couple of podcasts, the Business of Tech podcast every single day, and I do Killing It on a weekly basis. I do a bunch of YouTube videos too, giving editorial opinions and kind of view myself as the independent analyst and commentator for the space. So everything that I do is at mspradio.com. So that's the professional version. We'll do the personal stuff. So I guess, you know, you have to take this on. Hey, I'm a white guy. Like, I'm the typical white guy, IT guy in the space. Married, you know, very, very sort of traditional from that perspective. And I think one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot, and I, you know, you kind of have to own your own version of the journey, was the difference between the way I thought of myself prior to now versus what I'm trying to think of now. And the prior is that I've always had never thought of myself as ever like, you know, hey, I'm not sexist, I'm not racist, I'm not any of those things. And actually, I've always looked and said, hey, my best teams have been the diverse ones, have been the ones where like I have a group of people of all different backgrounds, both country and of, you know, men and women and had ethnicity and diversity. Like I've led really diverse teams and always thought that it was, oh, okay, I'm doing my little bit. And I think the big thing that's changed for me is much more thought about the systems that I'm a part of and the systems and in a way how they are also failing me. So, you know, Rhian's telling of that story, my thinking of it now is that I was always thinking about, well, that was the way things are, right? And we have, well, oh, we'll figure this in. But the system is failing people like me at some level by not actually providing me enough diversity in my network. I've grown up as part of a system that, hey, I'm a white guy, right? Excel, I've got a running start on a lot of different things. But what I also looked and say, like, I look at my professional network and go, wow, it's a lot of white dudes. Like, and actually, that's not great. Like, if I'm trying to get diverse opinions and trying to get better insight, like, it's not on the diverse groups to find me. It's actually on me to do a better job of cultivating those connections. And I think the first thing that I'm really trying to push for and say is this, and by the way, that's going to involve a lot of uncomfortable conversations. And I got to own those. And it's on me to be uncomfortable with that, not the other people to be uncomfortable with that, because I'm coming from a position where I've had the luxury of being ignoring that and I have to wrestle with that. So I think that's sort of my, both my professional version and the other way I'm trying to think really differently. You know, and I'm not sitting here saying like, oh, I got to pat myself on the back. No, it's like the work is on me to do that hard work and get the difference. You know, thank you for waiting. Thank you for being patient. Sorry. I'm trying to catch up now and thinking about it in a much more systematic way versus my traditional, what I had been thinking about, which was just this, hey, I'm doing okay as an individual.
Thank you, Dave. So I want to jump on one point there. So one of the things I think that I want to get across early, and part of the reason that I'm doing this, is that I think that it's on all of us to make this happen. And I will admit to my own failings in that, because for a long time, I didn't want to be seen as the black guy. And, you know, if people never saw a video podcast, never met me in person, there are a lot of people who just assumed I wasn't black. And I didn't make a big thing of it. I didn't, you know, unless, you know, you met me, you didn't know. And I didn't really make it a big issue. And when things did happen, maybe I didn't speak up like I should have in saying, look, those things happen. I'm black. We need to make sure that doesn't keep happening. So that's part of the discussion as well, and that I want to have here. So let me ask this before I let you guys start asking each other questions. And I don't know if this is can be answered more by Dave or by you, Rayanne, but in the tech community as a whole, is diversity really being discussed? Even though we have these groups out there, is it really being talked about the way that it should be?
I'll go first, Dave.
You know, I think this is one of those conversations where I should always go last, and I think I'm okay, and I'm okay with that.
So there are pockets. Let me say this: there are pockets of the channel that really, you know, go above and beyond for diversity, right? So, you know, CompTIA has now taken Advancing Women and merged it with Advancing Diversity, you know, so now it's one big community, and they are actively seeking, you know, to promote to young people, you know, and people of color and women, you know, to get them, you know, into technology and help them, you know, like, there's a group out there. It's called Lesbians Who Tech and Girls Who Code. And, you know, there's plenty of diversity things. Now, if you're getting yourself into a Facebook, you know, group like the IT, you know, the IT whatever group on Facebook, you know, no, it's not being discussed, you know, as a general rule. And, you know, when you get out to the conferences, if we ever actually get out to a conference again, but, you know, no, we're not sitting around the bar having a conversation about how, you know, we can, you know, improve diversity. And, but, you know, as there are diverse people there, nobody's saying, oh, hey, you're not one of us. You know, nobody's ever making anybody feel excluded. We just don't know how to attract them to make them feel welcome, I think, is my thought.
Okay.
All right, I'll be controversial. Unless, Amelia, unless you want to jump in, because I want to be great. I want to make sure I'm getting space for all the points. No, you know, I'm going to go on with a full on no, and I'm going to say so, Rand, because I would be the first to sort of say, you know what, I want to applaud like CompTIA and its efforts, but you know what, those meetings happen concurrently with things like the managed services community or the cloud community or the security community. So you have to actually make a conscious choice to say, you know what, I'm going to prioritize diversity over, I don't know, my core business choice, which is the wrong like framing of all of this. It's the wrong. So like, you know, I mean, I'll look and say like, have I popped my head into those meetings? Yeah, totally. But you know what they're usually against? Something that I look in on my stack rank of business priorities and think that I should, well, where do I want to spend my time? I only get this hour for this thing. And it's a counter-programming thing. That's something that isn't its own separate thing. It needs to be part of all of the conversation. You know, it should be part of a conversation. Like if we're doing HR discussions, it's in the managed services community. It's in the security community. It's about recruiting talent, or it's about, you know, making sure that you're getting all of the right voices to create that actually diverse group that looks like our customers. And having it off on its own, I look and say like, so okay, we're kind of talking about it, but we're not going to get to discussions beyond the, let's make sure we're inclusive, which by the way, I don't want to be dismissive of because we've got lots of work to do there. But if we're going to actually also talk about systematic stuff, it can't be its own separate thing. It's got to be integrated more into the conversations. I think I'm, you know, and maybe other people are looking going, Dave, welcome to the party. But I'm just looking and sort of saying, you know, I want to be one of the people now that's sort of saying like, hey, wait a second. We're not addressing this at all.
All right. Amelia, anything that you want to or can add?
Well, I mean, I would definitely tend to agree that, yeah, it feels like most of the conversation that we are having is involved in more like breakout discussions and panels. You know, you go to a tech show and there's a panel you can go see on diversity in tech, but it's its own separate thing. And I also agree with Rayanne's point that, yes, there's pockets where it's being discussed. My experience has been that those pockets are the pockets where the diversity already tends to exist anyways. I'm involved in a number of different forums and Facebook groups and subreddits. And, one of my favorite subreddits is trans focused, but something that comes up regularly in there is, oh my gosh, look at how many of us are involved in IT. We have these little sort of pockets or groups or cliques that form around our own diversity. And I think it's going to be important to figure out how to get everything kind of mixed in. I personally think that one of the best ways that we can do that is to strive to create more opportunities for people that are not yet in IT that would be part of that diversification effort to get their break into IT, whether that's through coding or learning hardware software support or whatever it may be that sparks their interest, but just making sure that we have those opportunities out there and readily available, I think will be paramount.
I actually have a question, if that's okay, Marvin.
Go right ahead.
How do you want these conversations to start? And let me tell you why I'm asking, right? Because Marvin called and, out of the blue, he and I had never spoken before. I don't think that we did. And he invited me onto this diversity panel podcast event. And he did not know how to ask me if I was gay. I'm not singling you out, but I want to point out the fact that these are difficult questions to ask people, right? So your exact words were something like, I don't want to be offensive, but it has been suggested, and I know exactly where you were going with this.
Right, right.
And, but why is that a difficult question? Why would it be, a difficult question for me to say, I'm a lesbian. And by the way, what's your race? Or how do you identify, Amelia, or whatever? What are your pronouns? I know the pronouns are all the thing now, but what is the best way to make people? And Dave, you nailed it when you said that the comfort, the discomfort was your own and should not be the other person. So how do we start these conversations without offending the recipient, and breaking through our own discomfort levels?
I'm going to be awkward for a moment. So Rand, you and I have known one another for a long time.
Yes.
I did not know who you were. Okay. I up until you literally just said that, I did not know it.
Really?
Because
you met my partner.
Okay. So first off, I'm generally always oblivious, right? Like, cause I just am, like, I'm just known for that, I'm going to wrestle with it live on state, right? Because I've known you as an accountant expert and a business expert. And at some level, that is irrelevant to the context that you and I have a relationship on, right? In that I know you for your professional accreditations and your expertise. And Amelia, we just met. We literally, this is the first time we met. And if you had not said something, I would not have thought. Like, I would not have known you were trans. I would have just assumed you were right. And I at some level, I don't want this. I want to actually wrestle with this publicly, because I think this is the conversation a bunch of people that you're kind of leading up to, and is where are the times for that and where is not? Because at some level, I trusted Marvin brought, for example, Amelia on it. So I assume Amelia, you're qualified. You've come with expertise. You've listed your credentials. Boom, good enough for me, because it's a transitive trust by getting introduced, right? And so there's this element of, like, people need to wrestle with what's appropriate. And I think, Rianne, I think that's where you're going with that. And then the other bit about it is that we have to kind of come as both as a society and individuals to this level of when is it systematic versus individual? Where we're providing, like, helping with opportunities. And I have no clear answers to this. And I always say I'm not a diversity expert, but we have to get uncomfortable. Like, we have to be uncomfortable with the starting and bringing these things up. Normally, we're not comfortable being uncomfortable and revealing that kind of stuff. Like, you know, what I have said before, like, hey, I didn't know that. No, because I probably didn't pay attention like I should have. I've generally known for, like, my wife will even tell you, like, I didn't remember her name for two times we'd met. So I'm generally considered oblivious. What's good, what's bad, and where do we be forgiving of that?
Well, okay. So let me answer the question that Brian asked, and here's what happens in my mind. I used to never really think about those things. I have been around gay people for a huge part of my life, and it was never anything that I systematically thought about. But I also know that there is a difference when you want to get into these types of discussions. I can't hide the fact that I'm Black, but you can hide the fact that you're gay, or you can just not tell people and they may not know. Same with transgender. There are some ethnicities that if people don't know a particular characteristic or something, you know, people can be Italian or Jewish and people would not necessarily know it outright. So there are times where if I am not sure and I think that there might be some sort of offense, then I try to take care. And the reason is because there are people who exist within our space that don't want to be known for being gay or transgender, or they don't want to be known for what other, you know, exclusionary trait that they have. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, we got to find a way to talk about it. And I'm just as guilty as everybody else. So here we are.
Well, so, and you know, in the interest of not having dead air too, I want to actually focus a little bit on the fallacy of thinking that it doesn't matter in that even that I'm bringing up. So for example, the journey everybody has taken individually matters in terms of sort of the difficulty of getting there and where they started. We're all generally uncomfortable, particularly like somebody, you know, who's you know, again, I've got the check boxes, right? Meaning I was born into wealthier parents, white male, meaning I've got, at some level, you have a running start on certain things to position. I don't have as many things to overcome. And I think people become very uncomfortable with that because they think it diminishes their own self-worth. And I think that you need to start understanding that no, it doesn't diminish your accomplishments. It doesn't, but you just have to recognize the, hey, when you're running a race and you've got a starting position that's better, you shouldn't just, don't spend all your time patting yourself on the back on how smart you are. You have to actually understand that people are coming at it from different places. And I think we need to be more open about that if we're going to, at an individual level, so that we can also start talking about things systematically too, because you have to recognize where you're at in order to actually make some changes to that, because it shouldn't start that way. We don't want to be in a position where different people start at different places, and yet we're trying to put on like it's a fair race. It isn't. So we have to actually start recognizing reality to start talking about. And I think that, and by the way, it is, the work then is on the individual person to start understanding that, to be more intelligent about the conversation.
Right. So having said that, Dave, let me go back to Rhianne and ask the question in reverse. How did that make you feel that I qualified my question in asking you to be on the panel?
So my partner works with me here in the office. And so she came in and I said, I just had the funniest phone call. And so I reiterated the words, it has been suggested, and she starts howling, right? So now we're both laughing. And, you know, so We took absolutely zero offense to it because there's very few things, you know, I mean, I've got some pretty thick skin by now, right? So there are very few things that will really, really offend me. And, you know, and you're right. I mean, I just look like a plain, you know, white woman. And I get, you know, I get mistaken for being a straight person all the time, you know, and because people just assume, you know, I don't look the part, whatever that means, you know, whatever that means. And, you know, and to Dave's point, it never, you know, my whole life didn't, it never really revolved about around that. You know, my life revolved around being, you know, being a business professional, being part of the IT community, being a community leader, you know, and my credentials and helping people. That's what it's always been about. So it's just, you know, so I'm really not surprised, Dave, that you did not know, other than, you know, I introduced you to Chris. It doesn't matter. But, you know, but I do want to, you know, I want to hear more from Amelia, because I'm certain that, you know, we're talking on things that you've got to have some input on, because, you know, your path, you know, is so unique from the rest of us, right?
Well, I mean, at a certain point, yes. As I said, I started nearly 20 years ago, and I think that my trajectory probably more closely mirrored Dave's at that particular point. Because as far as everyone was concerned, myself included, I was a straight white cis man. You know, there's a narrative out there that that trans people have always known, you know, since they were first born, that you know, they were trans, and that's really not the case. You know, you want to talk about being oblivious. I was very, very oblivious for most of my life. I'm coming up on 39 here pretty quickly, and I was only about 36 when everything really kind of clicked. You know, you have that sense of something's different. I don't know where I fit, but between what I would classify as probably a little bit of mental abuse growing up, and the time that I grew up in, with, you know, 60-minute specials talking about transgender people the way that they talked about them at the time, you know, just a lack of general exposure. I didn't really have the perfect storm of all the information that I needed to finally kind of figure out who I was. Until very recently. Sorry. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask. Okay, so let's say you go to a conference, or you're in this Facebook group of all of these different IT people. You know, is there a diversity conversation starter, you know, that is better than a different one? You know, what is that conversation starter? What, first of all, what do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about the fact that you are transgender, or do we want to talk about, hey, how did you get into this? Or how was your transition from straight male to transgender, you know, female, you know, in your professional life? You know, what are those the conversations that we want to have, you know, as opposed to just talking about your newfound identity? But how has that newfound identity, you know, enhanced your professional life or affected your professional life in one form or another?
I think as far as looking for the conversation starter, it really is going to kind of depend on, of course, the situation that you're in, right? Is this something where there's a benefit to turning this into a group discussion? Or is this something where it might be better off to take someone aside and have a quieter one-on-one conversation? You know, I wear being trans on my sleeve. At my shop, I have my trans and my pride flags hanging up for the whole world to see, because I think that it's important that we have those sorts of conversations. I think that it's important that someone like myself, who is comfortable being more visible, does what she can, because it all comes back to that sort of comfort level for everybody involved, right? I don't know that I would say I'm more comfortable than most, but I'm more comfortable than certainly some others that I know having those conversations. And so I make an effort to be more open. In a group setting, the discussion starters for me are usually somebody else starts talking about an experience they had with a transgender individual, or, you know, something comes up about something that they saw in the media. Somebody watched Orange is the New Black for the first time, and now they're talking about Laverne Cox. You know, that's the opening. I don't do a good job of going out of my way to start the conversations, but when an opening exists, I do try to take advantage of those.
Dave, any questions?
Well, honestly, part of it is also, I think it's important to listen a lot. You know, I know Rand's been on panels where I'm first like, oh, I always have an opinion, right? But actually, like, I think it's important in this particular set of cases to spend more time listening. I'm really trying to be better about that, particularly to make sure that I'm hearing different voices. And I think that so the answer is no, I'm not always going to necessarily jump in, because it's important to listen and see that space to make sure that it's the other voices are heard.
So, Rayanne, let me answer your question with a part two answer.
Okay.
So when your name was suggested to me to be on this panel, it was said with a qualifier, as if, you know, I'm not sure, don't hold me to it, but I hear. And that's kind of how that comment where I said it has been suggested, because the stigma from the other side, and without naming names, it was a white male, you know, they didn't want the stigma of outing you if you weren't outed. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense, because, you know, the last thing that you want to do is out somebody, you know, without their permission, you know, or knowledge, because that's never a good place for, you know, somebody, you know. And it's crazy to think that even today that, you know, being outed against your will could, you know, jeopardize your family relationships, jeopardize your professional relationships. You know, like, I literally had a client that fired me, not because we did a poor job, but because, you know, we had different views. You know, they're a straight, white, Catholic family, and clearly I'm not. So, you know, and we had had like at least a 10-year relationship before this realization came to this person. And then, you know, boom, like just one day, okay, we're switching accountants. We don't see eye to eye on things. And I was like, wow, really? You know, because I thought I was doing a better job than that. You know, oh, well, we didn't have any problem with the quality of your work, you know. As a matter of fact, we thought you did a great job. Well, okay, then, you know, so of course, you never want to out somebody. And, you know, and the last thing I would say is call somebody up and say, hey, you know, if you're looking for, you know, I think I heard that Marvin B might be Black, but I'm not sure, you know. I mean, doesn't that sound silly? But
well, it does, because you can see.
Well, right, but it isn't not the same.
But it is. You're right. It is, and you know, it's one of those things where, and I know that Amelia and I actually had a conversation about this, how people look at you differently when they know something personally, you know, where you might be fine to work on their computer, their network, their server, you know, until they know this one thing about you. Now, I've had it where I've thought I've had customers, you know, from the prospect stage. I've talked to them on the phone. I've sent my proposal. They say everything sounds good. They've heard referrals about me. Everything is great. I go to meet them and I get that, oh, you're Black. And I can tell just by the facial expression whether or not I'm going to get that job or not. In your case and in Amelia's case, you could be doing work for, you know, months or years until somebody knows. And then what happens? You know, what is the effect that that new knowledge has on the customer-client relationship?
Well, you know, I think the reverse is also true. What happens, you know, when you find yourself with a customer who you had no idea was a racist jerk, you know, and then all of a sudden, here it comes right in your face. What do you do with it? You know, and you might have, you know, had this relationship for years and, you know, you, because you've never spoken about it before, but now it is in your face. Do you fire that client? Do you fire that customer? You know, so here on one side, we're talking about the customer firing me because he found out that I was a lesbian. You know, now what do I do when I find out, you know, on the other hand, that, well, they don't want to fire me because, you know, I'm still white, right? You know, but now, but they are a racist jerk and they have, you know, they're not even apologetic about being racist jerks, you know? So do I take this 10-year-old customer and say, you know, out the door you go because I don't deal with racist jerks, you know? And, you know, are we doing this? Are we doing this as, you know, as business owners? Are we doing this as a community? You know, are we standing up for each other?
And I'm gonna jump in real quick because that's where like there's this element of are we standing up for another? And I'm gonna turning to every other white dude listening to this stream right now, going like I want all of us to that look like me that are thinking like me to realize there are four business owners on this call. Three have a challenge that I don't have to deal with every single day, right? And that's the important distinction to make here is to remember that you know you've got to. Part of the responsibility is to stick up is on people that look like me, that to say like, you have to stick up for this. You've got to get out of your comfort zone and stick up for this because they're facing a challenge that is system, that is individual and systematic. And they shouldn't have to be the ones fighting to be treated equal. That's where we're, from my mind, the big message that we have to start pushing forward is wait a second, that's we all if we're going to live our principles and say yes, we truly believe we want everyone to be competitive at the same way, wait a second, everybody that doesn't have that challenge, you've got to acknowledge that and start working on that challenge.
Amelia, we've taken over and left you out. Is there anything you want to add to what we just discussed?
So most recently I've had a former client interestingly enough, I had kept them through my transition. I transitioned openly here. You know, it's kind of hard to run a business that's public facing and transition at the same time without doing it openly. They stuck with me for 3 years. And then most recently here, I had one of my contract technicians out on site with them, working on one of their desktops. And he was approached and asked if, you know, he would be willing to just work with them directly because they were no longer comfortable working with me. As a trans woman, it seems a little odd. Like, okay, you waited like 3 years for this, so why is it that now it's an issue? But you know, if I had not known that they had that reservation about me, if I had not known that they had that potential to have what could ultimately be a harmful interaction with another one of my contract workers that is at this point starting their transition, you know, I think it might have led to potentially a worse situation. So I'm almost thankful for the clients like that, that kind of self-select out of my service. But, you know, again, I'm openly trans. People have plenty of opportunity to find that information and then do with it what they will. You know, I don't know what it would be like in like your situation, Rayanne, where you've had a client for 10 years that now it's an issue because they've gotten this one piece of information. I certainly don't know what it would be like to be in your situation, Marvin, where, you know, I'm closing the deal and then the in-person screws it because now they have the visual, right? It's a difficult position to be in. I'd prefer to never have any clients that I have to fire, but if they're going to be problematic on any level, then they're not worth keeping around. And certainly if they're going to be problematic on the level of racism or sexism, or any other discriminatory level, then yeah, they have to go.
So Dave, thank you for that, Amelia, by the way. But so Dave, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, one thing is very clear. You know, you being a cis white man, right? You know, I don't want to pretend that you don't have your own set of struggles, because
no. No, I also am also looking at this from the perspective. I'm also not sitting here saying like, oh, you know, white guys have to be the savior and rescue this. I want to have these harder conversations about it's easier to be oblivious to things based on certain circumstances, to not be thoughtful or considerate of in people's individual journeys, both on an individual level and what they've gone through. You know, look, I look at this conversation and I don't want people's message to be like the, you know, oh, I don't think anyone should look and say like, oh, Dave had a leg up, or that my own, that I'm not proud of my own accomplishments, or those other things. I look at it and say like, I did the legwork, right? I did the hard work on my bid. I've had my own challenges. You know, I can tell people my crazy family story, and you know, I've got like those things too. But what I think it's important to shine a light on is that it's not okay to be comfortable with the illusion that everything is always equal. And I think it's easy to be okay with that and be oblivious to it based on certain circumstances. And I just want to be a little bit more forward about challenging that. Partly because I have the ability to do so, right? Like I've built up, you know, I have a platform of people listen to me. they've done that. And I think it would be irresponsible to not use some of that platform to say, we have to listen more. We have to hear these stories so that we don't just assume or have the luxury of being oblivious.
Yeah. And maybe that's, you know, I wonder if that's one of the things, you know, as we start to really reach out to the diversity or diversified, you know, people in technology, you know, how can we get them to step up to the mic? How can we, you know, can we, you know, support them like in podcasts or Zoom meetings or, you know, community Zooms or whatever, you know, and maybe that's one of the ways to do it. I mean, you know, we certainly don't want a community of TikTokers or anything. That's not what I'm trying to get at. But, you know, maybe just encouraging people, you know, please step up to the mic. We do want to hear from you.
Well, actually, I want to give it a very concrete business way I've been thinking about it a lot. I've been trying to think through where my head's at on this kind of issue and what it means to me going forward. And actually, the thing that I'm trying to double down on is that I believe my own investment in being a better listener and having a more diverse network and connection is it's going to be actually a competitive advantage. I think, you know, if I think about my own worth out there, right, and hang my hat on having a reasonably good market view, understanding trends, identifying things early and providing that information. If I diversify and realize that my network, for example, may not be as diverse as it should be, I'm not getting as much information from sources that are different. If I double down and I execute there, it actually means that I'm going to have an better product. I will think more like my customers, the diverse population. It will give me the ability to be better, execute better, come up with better ideas. And I would think that for most savvy business owners at all levels, opening yourself up to that actually is a positive. I want the takeaway to not be just negative. It's the positive of listening and understanding is not only the right thing to do, by the way, it's a competitive advantage. You can actually do a better job on all sides, you know, like, and I think that's for me, the big thing that I've been thinking about is not just because it is the right thing to do, but also it's a smart thing to do because it's, and I like it when smart and right align.
As it should.
Yes, as it should.
So it's interesting listening to both you, Dave, and you, Rand, talking from kind of two different sides. Dave, you're talking a lot about, opening yourself up to diversification. And, you know, Rand, you're talking a lot about encouraging people from those more diverse walks of life to involve themselves more or encouraging them to step up and become part of the conversation. So I guess then my question is, like, where do we make those two things meet, right? Like, is there a balance that needs to be found that's like equally 50-50? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Brian, I'll be gracious. You know, I always have an opinion.
Well, please, I want to hear your opinion because I don't know that I have, you know, an acceptable answer as to how we get those two sides to meet. So by all means, Dave, take it away.
Well, I love it. Look, I'll make my standard preamble on this. I always have an opinion. I don't have to be right. I just have to start people thinking.
Okay.
So, Amelia, it's a really thoughtful question, and I've been trying to break it down in my head into two kind of buckets. The first is individual execution and the idea that individuals need to do that. And that's just simply the, like, you need to do a better job of connecting that, right? And people that are interested and those that want, like, should be able to do that. And I think the systematic way is I look at the organizations that we are all working with, you know. We talked about CompTIA, there's ASCII, there's Channel Pro, there's the vendors themselves, there's the distributor communities, there's all of these. I would kind of challenge to say, you know, if diversity isn't your sort of first priority, it's just not a priority, right? Everyone always knows that the top priority gets it. Let's move away from these conversations being an isolated community about just that. And instead find ways to put that into the meteor, I guess. I don't mean it to be dismissive, but I mean like that, what we consider the core bit of it, right? Like if I'm I'm picking on CompTIA only because I love, right? The like, but why don't that just be the meeting we all go to, right? Like, if we're setting up the agenda, why don't we all go to that discussion and then the business stuff kind of drives out of that versus this idea that we can put it all off on the side and it be competing for mind share. You know, that's an idea. It's not necessarily the best idea, but Amelia, to your point, is I think it's the individual, but also addressing that we have to make this systematic to the way that we're creating those opportunities versus, you know, and I don't want to call it lip service because I don't view it that I'm not don't mean to be dismissive, but it's not ancillary. It has to be a core priority.
Well, let me ask this question and throw a couple of qualifiers right after it. You know, are the groups themselves actually doing enough? And the reason I ask that is because as part of my initial, you know, set of emails asking for people to be involved, you know, I did send an email to CompTIA. I did send an email to Blacks in Technology. And here's, this is sad. I didn't know there was an official Blacks in Technology group. I've been in IT over 20 years. I'm Black. I should know that. But right. I didn't. Sure. I did not know that CompTIA had changed from advancing women in IT to advancing diversity in IT. I'm a member of CompTIA. I should have known that. Part of me is thinking I shouldn't have to go looking for it. It should be out there. And as a man with a microphone for the last 5 years or so, maybe they should have come looking for me. Now, that's probably arrogant thinking, but I mean, are the groups themselves doing enough?
No.
Is there any answer other than no?
You absolutely hit it on the head. You are expected, these groups do expect you to come find them. And, you know, and how can you do that? You know, and they might have, well, you can always just go to our website. Well, what if I don't know that you have a website, you know, and I get to your website and it doesn't tell me anything else other than how to send you money to join, you know, what, you know, so no, they are clearly not doing enough to attract or market, you know, to the appropriate people.
I tell me if I'm out of line on this one. I also want to say, like, I don't think we're being dismissive of the efforts. It's more just the, is it enough? Well, I think we're recognizing no. I think we like, for the same way that I'm, I hope I'm not, you know, fooling myself. I'm looking back saying, like, it's not like that was a problem. It's I wasn't doing enough. You know, I look back over sort of, you know, my career, my one of the things that I've done, and I'm looking back saying, okay, it wasn't a problem, but that doesn't mean I was fixing it either. And I think our call here is not a no in the, no, the things you've done are bad. It's more just, it's just proving to not be enough. We're not getting where we need to go. And I think this, what's unique about this time frame is that everything is accelerating so much faster. The metric that really has stuck in my head, because everybody knows I'm a huge metric nerd, is the New York Times looked at the analysis of public perception of Black Lives Matter over the 24 months or so up through, you know, about 2 weeks ago. And they found that in the 2 weeks post the murder of George Floyd, it was the same as 21 months previously. So you can sort of wrap your head around that. We had 2 years of shift in public opinion in 2 weeks. The pandemic, the current situation, that's causing a lot of things to accelerate really fast. I am sympathetic to people who are realizing that it's changing really fast, but it's changing really fast, everybody. Get on the train. Like and I think what we're recognizing is that it is that efforts previously were just simply not fast enough. The world is exploding. We've got to do that.
And with that explosion, right? So we've got all of this, you know, all of this activity and, you know, all of this immediate awareness, right? You know, it's like somebody woke up after, you know, after George Floyd was killed, the whole world just woke up one day and said, oh, I think I need to start being a human today. And, you know, and all of a sudden everybody's, you know, minds and focus and visions, you know, have changed where, you know, where the racial inequality has just literally come full front. And so here we are in this huge explosion of activity. And how do we corral it in such a way that it's at least, you know, productive and, you know, actually reaches the people and sends the message that we want, you know, the world to get? You know, is there too many people screaming in too many different directions? You know, and is there a way that we can, you know, unify the message? Is that even possible at that point, at this point? And if so, what is the message and how do we get it out?
I think even beyond making it productive, or I guess hand in hand with making it productive, it will be equally important to make sure that it's sustainable as well. You know, this is so important that we definitely don't want this to be the next fidget spinner craze, right? You know, this is something that every ounce of effort that can go into furthering the discussion on diversity, like this podcast, is going to be, I think, vitally important to continuing to make strides.
Well, I know we're not going to have all of the answers today or in any of the upcoming podcasts, but our goal is to keep moving towards better answers and better ways to keep the discussion going and keep the efforts going. So with that being said, we're coming up to an hour, folks, so I want to give everybody an opportunity. One of the things that I had wanted each of you to do is to talk about what is the message that you would like our listeners to leave with today. And we're going to go in reverse this time as to how we started. So, Dave, you don't get to go last this time.
Cool. Actually, I think that's appropriate. So for me, I think that the message that I'm trying to work on, own, convey, whatever the is, making it okay to be uncomfortable, making it okay to be more vulnerable, admit your failings and own them, and you know, and make that okay, because particularly in a situation where if you're kind of feeling like you're catching up or you're learning or you're flexing a new muscle, if you know, I feel like I'm not the right person to call it woke, but like if you're thinking that way, it's okay, right? Like, it's okay. You have to own that. You are responsible for that work yourself, but that is an okay place to be. And I thus feel like I should be more open about my own thinking and my own even failings on that to try and help normalize it. So for me, that's my message out there is it's okay to be uncomfortable. That's not a bad thing. Oftentimes taking those risks is a good thing. If we think about it in business terms, I'm going to qualify it the same way here, and being uncomfortable is okay.
Rhianne?
So when I was younger, I was a kid, I used to play the violin, and my violin teacher used to say, you know, you're going to make mistakes, and you know, make them loud and be proud of them. So, you know, and the point was, you know, don't just move the bow across the string so nobody can hear that the music. You know, really, you know, when it says to hit that string, hit the string. It might be right, it might be wrong, you know, but do it loudly and be proud of it, because that's the way that you're going to learn. And so what I'm telling you this because, you know, I think that, you know, we are a world full of diverse people, you know, different colors, different races, different cultures, different backgrounds, different, you know, gender orientation, sexual orientation. None of that matters. because no two people in, you know, are exactly alike in this world. And so, you know, you may feel alone, you may feel, you know, like, you know, you're insignificant or something less, but you're not, because we are, you know, we are all different and we are all, you know, insignificant, but you have a voice and you should not be afraid to use it. You know, get out there, be the best person that you can be, you know, be the leader in your community, be that person, you know, that can help other people, you know, to rise above, you know, and as you are helping somebody else rise above, you yourself are rising as well, you know. So, you know, I don't let any of these, you know, so-called barriers get in your way, because the only person, there's plenty of oppression in the world. I'm not saying that there is not, but, you know, you can overcome them, you know, just if you stay strong and you keep fighting, you know, and you make those loud mistakes and be that voice for so many people that cannot be that voice.
Amelia?
So my biggest thing is just be open. Where you feel that you are safe to do so, be open about who you are. You know, I think one of the best tools that we have to teach others is to talk from our own personal experiences. You know, and so if you can be open about who you are and be open about those experiences that you've had, it will be a benefit to everyone around you, who is then open to listen. And even those individuals who might not be as open as they should be, if they can at least hear a little bit of what you have to say, it might help move them to a better place as well.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen listening, I want to say thank you, especially to the three other panelists that we had here, Dave, Ryan, and Amelia. These are not always easy discussions, but they're ones that I believe we need to have. Conversations matter, and being able to sustain them for as long as we need to is something that I hope that we can do. We will have many more of these discussions. I have reached out to other people, so some of them are already lined up. But if you would like to join our discussion, just send me an email. You can send it to marvin@podnuts.com, and we'll get you lined up into one of the other panels, or do another podcast, or whatever you think is appropriate for the discussion that you want to have. If you want to download and listen to this and any other of the podcasts that I do, head over to podnuts.com, and you can subscribe to them either there or in the podcaster of your choice. We're on pretty much all of the platforms with Apple, Google, Spotify, and all the others. And then other ways you can follow content here is to follow the show on Twitter @PodNutsPro, and you can look for PodNuts Pro on the Facebook. Again, thank you to Dave, Rianne, and Amelia for having this discussion. Some of us, or all of us, will be back at a later date. And we hope that you'll join us then for another episode of PodNuts Pro. And until then, holla.